Howdy, regulars. This is Regular Dispatch 62. It's July 24th, 2020. Some habits, say researchers, are more important than others because they have the power to start a chain reaction, shifting other patterns as they move through our lives. Keystone habits influence how we work, eat, play, live, spend, and communicate. Keystone habits start a process that over time transforms everything. This then is the answer of where to start. Focus on keystone habits, those patterns that when they start to shift, dislodge, and remake other habits. Identifying keystone habits, however, is tricky. To find them, you have to know where to look. There are three basic characteristics that keystone habits all share. And if you look for these characteristics, you can figure out which parts of your life can become leverage points for success. Characteristic one, the science of small wins. When Michael Phelps' alarm clock went off at 6:30 in the morning of August 13th, 2008, he crawled out of bed in the Olympic Village in Beijing and fell right into his routine. He pulled on a pair of sweatpants and walked to breakfast. He'd won 3 gold medals earlier in the week, giving him 9 in his career, and had 2 races that day. Phelps' first race, the 200-meter butterfly, his strongest event, was scheduled for 10 o'clock. 2 hours before the starting gun fired, he began his usual stretching regime, starting with his arms, then his back, then working down to his ankles, which were so flexible they could extend more than 90 degrees, farther than a ballerina's end point. At 8:30, he slipped into the pool and began his first warm-up lap. The workout took precisely 45 minutes. At 9:15, he exited the pool and started squeezing into his LZR racer, a bodysuit so tight it required 20 minutes of tugging to put it on. Then he clamped headphones over his ears, cranked up the hip-hop mix he played before every race, and waited. Phelps had started swimming when he was 7 years old. His coach, Bob Bowman, knew Phelps could be great, but to become a champion, he needed habits that would make him the strongest mental swimmer in the pool. So Bowman focused on giving the swimmer keystone habits that drew on what's known as the science of small wins. Small wins are exactly what they sound like. A huge body of research has shown that small wins have enormous power, an influence disproportionate to the accomplishments of the victories themselves. Small wins are a steady application of a small advantage, one Cornell professor wrote in 1984. Once a small win has been accomplished, forces are set in motion that favor another small win. Small wins fuel transformative changes by leveraging tiny advantages into patterns that convince people that bigger achievements are within reach. Which is exactly why Phelps' daily stretching routine and eating routine and every other routine served as a keystone habit. They created a mounting sense of victory. There's a series of things we do before every race that are designed to give Michael a sense of building victory, his coach, Bob Bowman, told me. If you were to ask Michael what's going on in his head before competition, he would say he's not really thinking about anything. He's just following the program. But that's not right. It's more like his habits have taken over. When the race arrives, he's more than halfway through his plan, and he's been victorious at every step. All the stretches went like he planned. The warm-up laps were just like he visualized. His headphones are playing exactly what he expected. The actual race is just another step in a pattern that started earlier that day and has been nothing but victories. Winning is a natural extension. Keystone habits create small wins. So to identify the keystone habits in your life, look for those patterns that give you numerous small senses of victory, places where momentum can start to build. Characteristic 2, create new platforms. The second way that keystone habits create success and can be identified is by looking for patterns that create new platforms from which other habits can emerge. When Phelps was a teenager, for instance, at the end of each practice, Bowman would tell him to go home and watch the videotape. Watch it before you go to sleep and when you wake up. The videotape wasn't real. Rather, it was a mental visualization of the perfect race. Each night before falling asleep, and each morning after waking up, Phelps would imagine himself jumping off the blocks and in slow motion, swimming flawlessly. He would visualize his strokes, the walls of the pool, his turns and the finish. He would imagine the wake behind his body, the water tripping off his lips as his mouth cleared the surface, what it would feel like to rip off his cap at the end. He would lie in bed with his eyes shut and watch the entire competition, the smallest details, again and again, until he knew each second by heart. During practices, when Bowman ordered Phelps to swim at race speed, he would shout, "Put in the videotape," and Phelps would push himself as hard as he could. It almost felt anticlimactic as he cut through the water. He had done this so many times in his head that by now it felt rote. But it worked. He got faster and faster. Eventually, all Bowman had to do before a race was whisper, "Get the videotape ready," and Phelps would settle down and crush the competition. By establishing a keystone habit of visualizing victory every morning and night, Bowman and Phelps created a platform from which another habit, calming down and performing during a critical race, became effortless. The visualization keystone habit had prepared the soil from which other habits could grow. Characteristic 3. Establish a culture where excellence is contagious. Back in Beijing, it was 9:56 a.m., 4 minutes before the race's start. And Phelps stood behind his starting block, bouncing slightly on his toes. When the announcer said his name, Phelps stepped onto the block, as he always did before a race. And then he stepped down, as he always did. He swung his arms 3 times, as he had before every race since he was 12 years old. He stepped up on the blocks again, got into his stance, and when the gun sounded, leapt. The final characteristic of identifying keystone habits is to look for those moments when excellence, or change, or perseverance, or some other virtue, seems to become contagious. Keystone habits are powerful because they change our sense of self and our sense of what is possible. For instance, during that race, Phelps knew that something was wrong as soon as he hit the water. There was moisture inside his goggles. He couldn't tell if they were leaking from the top or bottom, but as he broke the water's surface and began swimming, he hoped the leak wouldn't become too bad. By the second turn, however, everything was getting blurry. As he approached the third turn and final lap, the cups of his goggles were completely filled. Phelps couldn't see anything. Not the line along the pool's bottom, not the black T marking the approaching wall. He couldn't see how many strokes were left. For most swimmers, losing your sight in the middle of an Olympic final would be cause for panic. Phelps was calm. Everything else that day had gone according to plan. The leaking goggles were a minor deviation, but one for which he was prepared. Bowman had once made Phelps swim in a Michigan pool in the dark, believing that he needed to be ready for any surprise. Some of the videotapes in Phelps' mind had featured problems like this. He had mentally rehearsed how he would respond to a goggle failure. Most important, Phelps' keystone habits had established a certainty within his mind. He could succeed no matter the obstacles. After all, he had always succeeded before. His self-image, all of his habits, were built around the certainty of overcoming any problem. As he started his last lap, Phelps estimated how many strokes the final push would require. 19 or 20, maybe 21, and started counting. He felt totally relaxed as he swam at full strength. Midway through the lap, he began to increase his effort, a final eruption that had become one of his main techniques in overwhelming opponents. At 18 strokes, he started anticipating the wall. He could hear the crowd roaring, but since he was blind, he had no idea if they were cheering for him or someone else. 19 strokes, then 20. It felt like he needed one more. That's what the videotape in his head said. He made a 21st, huge stroke, glided with his arm outstretched, and touched the wall. He had timed it perfectly. He ripped off his goggles and looked up at the scoreboard. It said WR, world record next to his name. He'd won another gold. After the race, a reporter asked what it had felt like to swim blind. "It felt like I imagined it would," Phelps said. "It was one additional victory in a day full of small wins. It was a triumph of Keystone Habits, just another step in a lifetime of success." All right, so this is a piece by Charles Duhigg. I'm not exactly sure. I don't remember if this is... I think that this was published in a newspaper, and it might be from one of his books. He's got one called The Power of Habit and one called something like Faster, Stronger, Better or something. I think that's his. I'll find out and put links in the show notes, which will be at regular.fm/6262. It's inspiring, obviously. I mean, Michael Phelps, you know, trying to say we're going to learn techniques from Michael Phelps or Michael Jordan or Tiger Woods or something is a bit crazy because clearly they're the best in the world. Nonetheless, it can be instructive and inspiring, I think. And if nothing else, by the way, sometimes, like, it's fair, I think, to be skeptical when a writer just mentions, oh, and a research study says, because oftentimes those things can be not great and the research can flip back and forth, and that entire world of research itself is an ongoing conversation, isn't it? Nonetheless, I like this idea and this construct here of Keystone Habits, and you pick some, and the three-part thing of how do you know which one, how do you identify the Keystone Habits among all the habits of life? It's pretty simple. This little framework, at least, which can generate these little small wins that become this a platform, in a sense, that can spread to others. And I think it's also worth, yesterday in James Clear's Thursday email, it started with progress requires unlearning, I think. So for all of us who aren't about to go win, you know, multiple Olympic medals and compete at world class in something like that, it's still helpful, I believe, to, like, what are our accidental Keystone Habits, the anti-habits, the habits that that are creating small losses, if you will, and becoming contagious in the wrong direction. You know, these are feedback loops, virtuous or otherwise. And so how do we unplug the bad ones? Someone like Michael Phelps has got it down where seemingly every second of his day is choreographed expertly. And he's rehearsing that mentally constantly as well. It's really fascinating too, because it just seems like then the victory at the moment of the race, which you have just all those years of training that come down to, can you get it done in this one chance? You got this one shot, that's it. And so how they all pull that off is wildly impressive. Almost none of us live that way. We're not that committed. We're not that focused. We're not that singular in aim. And we don't have to be, thankfully. You do, I suppose, if you decide you're going to pick something and become the best in the world at the game of basketball or golf or, I mean, you know, teaching or acting, or there's any number of disciplines, programming, code, going to space. there's lots of things you can decide you're going to be the best at, and it requires a near maniacal dedication. But for all of us civilians out in the world, still, like, seriously, like, what are the habits you have right now that you should just get rid of? When it comes to things like food, you know, paleo, keto, all these different things cycle through. And I've poked at a couple of them sometimes. Keto doesn't do it for me. I've followed paleo pretty rigorously at different times, and it turns out before it had a brand name, I was doing it accidentally anyway, back when I wanted to unplug some of anti-Keystone habits. I would just make a list of things I would not eat for X days. And for me, the main offenders are obvious. They're like ice cream, cereal, those two alone, ice cream and cereal. I can intake an absurd amount of superfluous calories, but then like, tortillas, you know, basically the violators associated with Tex-Mex chips. If I would just cut those out, that would solve like 75% of any would-be diet for me. Because when I'm really after it, I can put away the ice cream and the cereal. So, I was doing that for a long time before. And, so it's fun to think about, and it's fun to experiment with. David Goggins, somebody like that, talking recently about the Goggins challenge, where he would, this man has done like ultras every weekend and marathons daily, and he set the Guinness Book of World Records for pull-ups, and he failed on his first two attempts. Like that, he's quite an example of what's possible when you lift off the lid and of false limits we place on ourselves and attack something. And I think the first time he failed on the pull-up bar, it's because when he got there, the bar he used was looser than the one he trained on. So he was losing a lot of force. And when you have to do thousands of pull-ups, that really adds up, and it took a toll on all of his body. He just had complete shutdown at some point. The second time, the bar was more rigid, but it's just ripping through his hands. I think it literally was just cutting his palms wide open. Had to quit. And he finally made it on his third try, which he did only 2 months after his second try, something like that. So he obviously developed Keystone habits. He didn't use that term. It's probably a made up term here by, it's either a made up term by Duhigg here, or, you know, it's from the quote research into this sort of thing. And what Goggins likes to do too is just gut something out. He just has this basically limitless ceiling where he's just going to refuse to quit. He's just absolutely going to refuse to quit. So he'll just keep at it. I think he ran a 100-mile race and he had broken his foot or something like at mile 70. So he ran a whole marathon after that fact, stuff like that. So there's, and for all of us though, the message really is there's any number of ways to carve at this. And the main thing to do is just start. Just pick something and go do it. I've enjoyed the last, I don't know, what has it been, a couple of weeks of getting up really early. It's about 6:30 in the morning right now. And I'd already been up for a while before I started doing this. I'm enjoying that tremendously. Is it a Keystone habit that's going to pay off over a long time? I'm not sure yet. But I like it, and I do like this idea of small wins. I've mentioned Darren Roberts here before. I think I mentioned him when talking about finding rejection, going out and on purpose getting rejected. He also talks about, like, he's the one who talks about writing a rejection resume instead of making the boilerplate where you went to college and the jobs you've had, make one that's the reverse, where you're capturing the people that turned you down, the colleges you didn't get into, the job you didn't get, the promotion you didn't get, the project you started that completely flopped, and make a list of all those things. It's similar, that connects to David Goggins and his notion of a cookie jar. Every time Goggins goes out and does one of these crazy things, he says he throws in the cookie jar. He keeps a mental record of these times when he's surmounted some challenge, so that when he's under duress the next time, he can go open the cookie jar and remember that he's conquered things before and that he can get over this one too. And so for Darren, he's got his rejection resume idea. And he's been doing a lot. Like, I happen to see him when I go log into LinkedIn for some reason. And he puts a lot of his content there. And I think on Instagram, too, for what it's worth. I'll find his stuff and put links to it. It's worth checking out. But he likes celebrating these micro wins. He tries to stack up three, it looks like, each morning early. And he'll write them out on an index card. And then take a picture of himself, holding like a selfie of himself holding that index card and putting it out. He teaches, you know, UT kids and others. And I think he's trying to really light a fire and get people thinking in that way. And of course, y'all know me, or you've been listening or hear me talk, like, I keep wondering, there's got to be a way to stitch groups of people together and give us simple tools to do this among each other. There are some, definitely. There's habit trackers and other such things, and fitness apps, and you can connect with pools of people and kind of compete and collaborate and hold each other accountable and that kind of thing, and that's cool. But I'm also just thinking about too, like, those tend to be like a fitness app or something. I think it'd be interesting for a group of people to all do that. And that reminds me, I almost today picked up Laura Sandifer's book, Courage to Grow, and went through some of the cultural artifacts and tools that the Acton Academy kids, and these are true kids, like first grade through 12th grade individuals, are using to peer review each other, hold each other accountable, set their own goals, get it done, get after it, and focus on their learning. And I'll probably do that next week because it's fascinating stuff. Hopefully the Michael Phelps stuff was interesting and inspiring. I love the idea of his playing the videotape. I'll say a little bit about that. That we all are doing this. Michael Phelps has his coach, Bob Bowman, directing him to play the videotape, and he would imagine swimming a race in every detail over and over and over. The last thing of the day and the first thing of the morning. And what I guess we could all realize is we're all playing some videotape all the time. And is it a healthy and nutritious food, or is it junk that we should get rid of? I guess I'm going to try to be more cognizant of that videotape that plays in our heads. And if it's no good, chuck it and take the reins and put in a different videotape that represents the goals that we seek in the next mountain right in front of us. Thanks, y'all. Have a great weekend.